Anger, it says it occurs 234 times, the word anger. And this is not including wrath and ire and all of that. This is just the word anger. It occurs 234 times in the King James Version of the Bible.
Welcome to the Connect Method Parenting Podcast, where correction is out, connection is in, and your kids want to listen to you. I'm Andy Martineau, creator of Connect Method Parenting, here to help you stay calm, confident, and connected no matter what. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about something that's very fascinating. Your mind's going to be blown. And I have an amazing guest with me. She's worked with me. She's studied all sorts of things that just blown my mind. Without further ado, it's Natalie Hunsaker. Welcome. So excited that you're here.
So happy to be here, Andy.
I'm so excited. Natalie's a mom of four. Like I said, we've done some parent coaching together. We've talked about, geeked out about parenting stuff. The first time that you reached out with these concerns, it was years ago. I think I remember this message you sent me and you were like, I don't know if what you're talking about is lining up with what I'm reading in the Bible, what I feel like God is like. And it started this beautiful unfolding that I cannot wait for her to talk about, because I was reassuring her. I'm like, I promise it works. It works. It might not look like it.
And I wanted it to work because it sounded so beautiful. But I'm like, how do I make sense of this in my brain? Yeah.
Yes, yes. But before we dive into that, and you can tell I'm extremely excited to get into it because Natalie shared parts of it with me, but never have we unpacked it as much as we are going to today. And I know it's going to be extremely helpful for everyone, because this is one of the things I hear is this conflict between, you know, this isn't what it feels like is supported either by my belief system, by society, by, you know, like there's this reason, this case against having a connected, calm approach to dealing with our children, because it feels like we're seeing the opposite. And we're going to be specifically talking about the Bible and what Jesus says and what we feel like we've read in there from a Christian perspective today. And I think that's an important conversation to have, because if we feel like something is at odds with a core belief system that we truly live our life and base our life on, then yeah, it's going to be really hard to go all in. And so it's important to address it. So we're going to dive into this with Natalie. And I just have to mention, Natalie just have four kids, but she is one of the most talented artists that I know. Like, I look at her work and I'm just astounded. And she's been published and she does amazing projects for private. I know there's a private school that you're doing a project for. You've been in museums. It's amazing. So we're going to tell you where you can go check out all of her stuff at the end, because you're going to want to go check it out. She's incredibly talented and just really insightful and guided. And I feel so like you're so inspired to have gone on this journey to figure out how do we make sense of the fact that in the Bible, it feels like what's being said is that God is angry, or he has wrath, or he, you know, he's doing these punitive, what we could say, consequences to people. How do we make sense of that?
It even says he's jealous and vengeful, right?
Yes.
Like, so it's like, wait, who do I worship here? And do I need to be like that as a parent? Yeah, you're right on, Andy.
Yeah, it's just this conflict. So I would love for you to dive in wherever you want to. You know, we're going to just have this conversation. Everyone just, we're feeling like you're in this conversation with us. We're all, you know, snuggling around a fire and having a cozy conversation together. So hopefully you feel like that. We're inviting you
conversation
in.
Because everything that you've taught has been so awesome. And I've, like, the more I have learned to incorporate it, the better and better and better my home just feels. The better it feels to me, the better it feels to my kids. And we're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, I mentioned, and you know this about me, but the listeners don't, but like, I come from a home where anger is like the go-to emotion. And when you want something done and you want it done fast, like, you use anger to get it done. And so that was the environment I was raised in. I have wonderful parents. I don't fault them or blame them. All they were doing the best that they could do. And I am doing the best that I can do, but I catch myself using anger a lot too. And so when you kind of have this idea that you can raise kids without using anger, it was like, I want that. And I knew I wanted that because I don't feel good when I'm angry. And you'll find places where it's like, oh, anger is a great emotion. It's a motivating emotion. Mm-hmm. It moves you to action. And I think anger can spark good things, but I don't think good things ultimately result from anger alone. It can move you, but it actually dissipates. And then what continues to move you is passion and conviction, not anger. And that continued passion and conviction is actually what influences people. So anger is a warning. It lets us know. My mom's a psychiatrist, and she works with a lot of people, manages meds and everything. And she always says anger is about unfair. It's about when things are unfair and our alarm system goes off to let us know. And again, if our thoughts are square and right, like you're talking, when we're really, really clean in our thoughts and something is genuinely unfair, then anger might move us to action. But again, it's a very short-lived emotion, and it does disperse into intent and passion, the good kind of passion. Oh, that's another word. Oh my gosh, I could get into that. But when you said God isn't angry, I remember on a call you saying that God doesn't get angry. And I was like, well, but he does all over in the scriptures, and it says he's angry all the time. So what do you mean he doesn't ever get or act out of anger? And it really, really, really sparked a lot of study for me, because I want to know more about the nature of God. I want to reflect his light. I know you have a broader audience. I hope it's not offensive that we use the Bible. I imagine it won't be, because Muslims like the Bible too, and Hebrews, yeah. Jews love the Bible. They like the Old Testament. I'm actually going to be mostly in the Old Testament today. Christians love the Old Testament. We have all that in common. Yes. There's some really interesting things in the New Testament. So I'm going to be focusing in there. So hopefully, regardless of what religion that you are, what you feel like you connect with, I think this will be really fascinating. So yeah. I want to start with number one. God doesn't change, right? We know that. And I don't have the scripture off the top of my head, but he is unchanging. We're people are the ones who do change. And I know there's an idea out there too that the prophets of God are infallible and therefore they can't change either. But I'm not so sure that I believe that. I haven't really believed it my whole life. And as people have said that, I'm like, I don't know, because people are still people. And as I looked in the Bible, I think you'll be really, really fascinated to see how the Bible changes. And not because God is changing, but because the culture is changing. So one thing that I just want to say really quick about the Old Testament culture versus the New Testament culture. So in the Old Testament, there were a lot of nations whose sole desire was essentially to take over the known world as we know it, even though it was a very small geographic area compared to the world now as we know it. Back then, it was pretty much the known world as they knew it. And the Assyrians were brutal. Like, they were just a brutal people. They have a really bad reputation among historians. And even though historians will say, well, you know, there were some Assyrians that maybe weren't so bad, you know, and they will say, oh, well, maybe it wasn't so bad as we say it is. Nobody will argue about the fact that the Assyrians' code of conduct when they were taking over nations and trying to control the whole world is that they would come in, they would destroy a city, and they would take all the people in the city, and then they would like split them up into different areas, right? So we're going to take this family, we're going to take them north. These people, we're going to take them east. These people, we're going to take them northeast. We're going to like spread them out geographically.
Yeah.
So they can no longer either talk to each other, communicate. They can't, like, there wasn't really a road system. So like passing letters, they were isolated linguistically. They were like isolated culturally. They were isolated religiously. That's a pretty, pretty brutal way of dominating, you know, after you kill enough people that you destroy their city and then you just like remove them from anything and everything that is familiar to them. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And that is the world of the Old Testament. That's the world that they were used to. And then once you get into like Persia eventually overcame, you know, the Persian Empire eventually overcame the Assyrian Empire, and we have like all of history. And eventually by the time you get to Christ, you have the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire had a very, very different culture. And their culture, actually, I could mention Babylon too. Babylon was closer to Assyria. They, instead of separating people and taking them into all of different cities, they actually did something very similar, but they also made an added step. Okay, now that you're in our city, let's make sure we really welcome you to this super comfortable, awesome place to be. Like, let's make this as wonderful and great for you to live here in this new environment so that you'll actually like it and want to stay even if you have a chance to return. Yes. And so they really made an effort to not just isolate you religiously, but also to assimilate you religiously. And so then fast forward to the Roman times, and by Roman times, there had been enough population growth, enough people, and this, you know, I'm going to take over the world thing, that they realized it didn't really work to isolate and separate people from their religions because it created too much resistance ultimately. Even if they were separate and even if the resistance was less effective because they couldn't get together in big groups, it was still resistance. And it was really hard to manage more and more and more people the more resistance there was. Okay, so why does this history matter? Because Rome figured out that we're going to let people believe and worship the way they want to so long as they keep our basic rules and pay our basic taxes. Okay? So that's a really different world to be in than a world that says we are going to dominate you altogether. When you're in a world that says we are going to dominate you no matter what and you have no choice, guess what the prophets sound like? They sound like that. God's going to dominate you, and guess what? Like, you're going to pay big.
Yes.
And that cultural feel, that culture, it was everywhere. It's like being in America without knowing what a movie is, right? Like, we have cultural things that, like, we breathe, we eat, we drink. They're just so part of who we are. It doesn't even occur to us that it could be different. And that was the kind of world that the Old Testament was. It just was. I mean, slavery was rampant. It was common. The Egyptians are taken over. They're having the Hebrews as slaves. So Isaiah, by the time Isaiah, he was the one, that's why I've learned mostly about Assyria and Babylon, because I love the words of Isaiah and I've studied him the most. But this is a world of domination.
It's a world of fear, too.
And it's a world of fear. Oh, absolutely.
I remember learning, too, like when I was studying this as an adult with my kids, how the history was blown out of proportion. It was like, my God is stronger than your God. So we're going to tell you how our God's going to kill everyone.
Right.
And now they've done historical, like, I don't know, I'm not a Bible scholar. So, but I've read a little bit to say, like, some of the stories, the way they're described in the Old Testament might not actually be historically accurate, but their idea of history back then is very different than our idea, because it was stronger and meaner and more vicious.
That was the perception.
And it was a protection mechanism too. It was like, well, maybe if they think our God will destroy them, they won't come kill us.
Right. And that was the belief. Our God is stronger than your God. And if you lost in battle, it was because your God was weak and it didn't have anything to do with anything else.
Strategy, right? Or anything like
was
that.
It strategy? Yeah, right. Or military strength, or you outnumbered them. It was like, nope, we won because our God is better than your God. And
yes.
And so portraying, even the motivation to portray a God as strong was really high. And I want to make clear too, you said I'm not really a Bible scholar. I want to make clear, I don't actually consider myself a Bible scholar either. I consider myself a mom who's curious and I want to know. And so I don't know everything about the Bible, and I won't remember names and I can't remember verses. Like, I have a really hard time with that. And I don't have a problem that I don't feel like I'm a scholar, but I know a lot about the things that I want to know about in order to be a better mom. And studying anger in the Bible did that for me, because here's the deal. I went through and I actually counted up all of the instances of the word anger. And I just found, even today when I was looking it up again, that if you look at it numerically, let me just tell you, I use a resource called the Blue Letter Bible. I don't know Hebrew. I don't know Greek. I don't know any of these things. But I actually have a video. I'll tell you this. If any of your listeners want to know my video, you'll have to just kind of like go through a little email thing that I have in my videos in my email. If you want to sign up for like a freebie on how to study the way that I study, I will send it to you, but you don't have to be a Bible scholar to study this way. So just let me know if anybody wants to do that.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, because I don't want to go through and explain where I'm finding all this stuff. And if you want to know, it'll be in that email. If you don't, that's cool.
Yeah.
So anger, it says it occurs 234 times, the word anger. And this is not including wrath and ire and all of that. This is just the word anger. It occurs 234 times in the King James Version of the Bible. So if you look at anger and wrath and ire, and if you count them all up and you take them as a percentage of the number of pages, and I'll send you this file, Andy, so you can put it. You can just see this little table that I've compiled here, because one of the reasons that I got really curious about this in the first place is because Isaiah 18, a lot of people are familiar with verse 18, like, come now, let us reason together, saith the Lord, though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow, though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool. We all like take a lot of comfort in that scripture, because we're like, oh, the Savior is going to save us, right? And that's an awesome verse. But what really, really, really threw me off guard was in verse 16 and 17, he gives us instructions to prepare us for verse 18.
Okay.
And the instructions totally blew my mind. I've been like thinking and pondering about this for probably 15 years now. Verse 16 says, wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings before mine eyes and cease to do evil. And that made a lot of sense to me. Like, try to be a good person, you know, try to be clean. Like, that makes a lot of sense. Like, well, duh. Like, if we're going to follow Jesus, we're going to try and do those things. Learn to do well in verse 17. But this is the part that threw me off. Seek judgment. Relieve the oppressed. Judge the fatherless. Plead for the widow. So seek judgment and judge the fatherless. We're like, what the heck is he talking about? How is that like learning to be nice? I thought we weren't supposed to judge, right? So I spent a lot of time studying that, and I'm going to share. I just want to ask you, Andy, like, just quick gut check right now. I'm going to quiz you.
Okay.
If you think the word judge or judgment, which book do you think the word judge is going to show up more? The Old Testament or the New?
If you're new to Connect Method Parenting, I have a great way for you to get started. I created a free course that covers some of the biggest challenges parents are facing and how Connect Method Parenting solves them. In an hour, we're going to talk about why parenting is so hard, how to get your kids to want to listen to you, how to stop yelling and losing your cool and become that calm, confident, connected parent for good. It's the fastest way to get started using connection as your go-to tool for influencing and impacting your kids. Go to cmp.works/course to get instant access today. I would think the old, just based on what we were kind of saying context-wise, but I haven't done my research. Okay. I'm guessing I'm wrong.
No, that's okay. So judged, judgment, just, justified, like a lot of that feels like you're going to be in the Old Testament, right? Okay, what about anger, angry, wrath? What do you think about that?
I would say the same thing because, you know, they were more angry and wrathful in the Old Testament. Yeah.
What about mercy?
I mean, for sure, I'm going to go to New Testament because that's where we get kind and loving and merciful, it seems like. That's my perception.
And then grace. No, that's okay. Keep going, because I think grace, this is the perception of pretty much everyone.
New Testament for sure again, right? Grace, because Jesus new comes Testament in and sure. opens up the new way of being. Not an eye for an eye, right? You're like, turn the other cheek.
Now you're turning. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Here is the cool thing. You are right about grace and anger, but all the other ones are wrong.
Judgment is more in the New Testament.
The word judge shows up 1.8 times more in the New Testament than it does in the Old, as a function, as a percentage of the number of pages.
Interesting.
The word judged, it shows up 3 times more in the New Testament than it does in the Old.
That is so surprising.
The word just shows up 2.3 times more, and justified shows 5.6 times more often in the New Testament than the Old. Isn't that cool?
Okay. That's so crazy. That's not what I would have thought.
So the word judgment, it actually is about the same. It's slightly higher in the Old Testament, but it's about the same. It's like 1.1 or 1.2 or something percent
higher. So it's like a wash.
Yeah, it's like a wash. Yeah.
Wow. What does that mean? That really is anger, not what I was thinking.
Let's finish all the words, because anger shows up 13.7 times more often in the Old Testament than it does in the New.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me either.
Angry shows up 1.6 times. But it's a testament to the fact that this is a cultural word, right? This is not God changing. This is culture changing.
Yeah.
But here's an interesting one too. Wrath is actually the same from the Old Testament to the New. And it's actually slightly higher in the New Testament than in the Old. Isn't that crazy? Mm. So the word wrath has a different kind of context. So then there's mercy, and mercy is slightly higher in the Old Testament.
No way.
Yep.
That's so crazy.
I know. You wouldn't think so. Slightly higher. I mean, it's mostly equal, but it is slightly more common to find the word mercy in the Old Testament than it is in the New. And then grace is like drastically more in the New Testament, so like 12 times more. So grace is as drastically higher in Greek as anger is drastically higher in the Old Testament, in Hebrew. So to me, that totally blew my mind when I started adding all this up, because I'm like, okay, clearly when he's telling me to be just, this is a separate thing from being angry. judgment and justice and judging are separate words, separate concepts, separate ideas than anger and grace. Those two things are just totally different. And the more I've learned about them, the better parent I become. So let me share with you the two words that in the Hebrew that were behind that verse that really confused me. So, and I actually have like an hour long video of this. I almost had it done and edited, and then some political garbage hit the fan. I realized that a person that I named in there is like in this middle of this huge political firestorm now. I'm like, shoot, I'm going to have to redo the whole dang video.
You'll just edit that part out.
I know. It's like, no, I got to do something to change that and update it. So I have an hour long video coming about this. So I won't say a ton about this because I could talk forever, clearly. But I will get down to this point, okay? So when he says to seek judgment, I want to be really, really clear about what kind of judgment that he's talking about. Because it is interpreted as judgment, justice, and ordinance, the act of deciding a case or a seat of judgment or a process or a procedure. I really, really like this one. It's also figuring out the right or privilege due to someone. It also is trying to figure out what is proper and what is fitting, what measures correctly, a custom, a manner, or a plan. And I feel like that is so important for parenting, because when we are seeking judgment, we are trying to figure out the rights and privileges due. We're trying to figure out what is proper, what is fitting, what measures correctly for this situation. We're trying to figure out how to help our kids. This is not seek judgment as in I'm going to execute you, right? I mean, it can mean that in some instances, but I feel like the vast majority of the definitions behind here, so like this Hebrew root word behind here, it is interpreted 296 times as judgment, but all of the other ways that you can interpret it are manner, right, cause, ordinance, lawful, order, worthy, fashion, custom, discretion, law, and measure, and sentence.
Okay, so you're saying, if you go back to the Hebrew text, someone had to translate that into English so that we could read it. And the word that was typically translated as judgment, we would read it as judgment, could also mean all of those other things, manner, right, cause, all those other
38 times it was translated as manner. 18 times it was translated as right. 12 times it was translated as cause. 11 times it was translated as ordinance, 7 times as lawful, 5 times as order. I can show you a little clip where people can see for themselves. Yeah. The same root word has been translated in those ways because that is what it means. It means that we are trying to figure out the manner of treating our children that's going to be the best. We're trying to figure out laws that we're going to have in our home, limits, as you call them.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this before this. But they're not punitive. They're not vengeful. This is us trying to figure how best to run an order. I mean, it's translated as order 5 times, like how to order our homes. That's what
it
means.
But you're saying also that, was it 200 times it's translated as judgment?
It is 296, yeah. So it's the vast majority of the time it's translated as judgment.
So fascinating.
So you got to consider that in the King James English world, to them, figuring out how to have wise laws and privileges and figuring out what's proper and fitting was the same thing as judgment. That's why they translated it as judgment. That's having good judgment. Like, let's have good judgment for this situation. Let's figure out what the right thing to do is. Let's figure out, you know, what kind of limits would be best for our kids or our societies or anything. That's good judgment. That's what he's saying. You need to develop the ability to have good judgment.
And I could also see how someone might interpret that word judgment not that way.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, they might have a different definition.
Seek judgment. Judge this person. And that's the thing, because the definitions of words change. And if somebody says, don't judge me, like, I get what they're saying, but they're not saying, try and figure out what's right and wrong. They're saying, don't criticize me. Don't accuse me. Mm-hmm. And they're right. Like, Satan is called the accuser. He said, I think it's in John, but it might be a different book because, like I said, I'm not a scholar and I don't ever remember references.
So go find the reference.
Yeah,
if you're really concerned about it.
But he really is like he's called the accuser both day and night. He is always pointing the finger, catching us in our mistakes, telling us what we're doing wrong. That's Satan. That is not God. That is not true judgment. And we call it judgment today. And then that colors our cultural coloring of how we're reading the scriptures. And it makes God seem a lot scarier than he really is. So we've got to understand that. Number two, then he says, now this is a different word that is translated as judge into English. This one is 119 times, but this is the last part of that Isaiah verse. And it's actually two different kinds of judgment. So when he says, seek justice, or he says, seek judgment, and then he says, judge the fatherless. So it's like, wait a second, why the heck am I judging kids that don't have dads? Like, that's just so bizarre to me, right? Mm-hmm. And then I found out, well, it's a different Hebrew root word than this seek judgment that is like trying to figure out right and wrong. So this is what this word means, to judge the fatherless. It says 119 times it's translated as judge, and judge the verb, and 60 times it's judge the noun. So lots of times it's translated as judge, but the rest of the things that it is interpreted as is plead 11 times, avenged 2 times, condemn 2 times, execute 2 times. So those sound a little scarier, right? Judgment 2 times, and then defend 1 time and deliver 1 time. So if you take out the judge, judgment, because those have all sorts of current modern connotations in them, and you just look at the other words, plead, defend, and deliver is still a grand total of 13 times. Avenge, condemn, and execute is a total of six times. So still, twice as often, it is a merciful word before it is a painful word, more than twice as often. And here's the thing. It shows up in the context of little children, of orphans. And then right after, he says after that, plead for the widow. So aside from King James Version, other Bible translations of this will actually consider this to be like, they will say, defend the fatherless, protect the fatherless, seek a just verdict for the fatherless. So there's other ways of viewing that are more in context that help us understand that word in a better way. But here's the thing. I find that it pops up a lot in the context of orphans and widows. Orphans and widows. It's always orphans and widows.
It's defend them.
Defend them. Yeah.
Help
and
them.
And who suffers the most in a society that is really wicked? The orphans and widows.
Yeah.
And so he is saying that part of becoming a righteous person, part of being somebody who is following Jesus, is being somebody who will stand up for and defend orphans and widows, the most vulnerable of any population, right? We have to protect the vulnerable. And if we don't, that is the only time when God's like wrath, if you want to call it that, becomes apparent. It is always in defense of the vulnerable. I was reading the other day about I was listening to a podcast actually, and he made reference to this idea that God destroyed the earth at Noah's time because the innocents, the orphans, and the widows were being taken advantage of. And then he said that God weeps for those people when they suffered. And then he says that he is going to renew a world that is safe for the orphans and widows. So whenever you see destructive acts in the Bible, I want you to just start noticing how often it is connected with the oppression of the weak and the vulnerable. Because when we see that, when we see God doing any kind of great destructive act or allowing a great destructive act, it is in that context pretty much every time that I've been able to find.
Yeah.
And that's his limit. Like, that's his limit to say, you know what? I'm not going to let these little children suffer anymore. And I have to stop this. And that is the only time his really kind of scary, destructive side is seen. But it's not because he enjoys destroying things or people. It is because he wants to protect the little ones and start again with a clean slate. That's his motive.
Yeah, that's his motive. And well, it got me thinking. I had a conversation just earlier this week with a mom, and we were talking about how the same action that a mom might take, like say they have to say no to a child. Two parents might say no to a child, but, and it might look exactly the same. Like if we could measure or somehow document the words that they said, the behavior that they went through, it might look identical. However, the way it was done could be completely different. Yeah. Like one mom could be doing it out of anger or frustration because she's totally at her wit's end. And one could be doing it from a place of compassion and service. And even though both of them are saying no, right? Like,
right.
It's different. And the people who are observing it, say there was a crowd watching them, if you asked all the people based on their life and how they view the world, they might label or describe the words that this mother says to the child differently based on their conditioning, based on the world that they, you know, if you take an Old Testament person, you take a New Testament person, you take somebody from the Dark Ages, you take somebody yeah. from today, they're all going to have different opinions of what just happened. And so I love this idea that even though it might have felt and documented, right, it might have been documented in a way that appeared or one interpretation, and it might have been absolutely appropriate for that person to feel that way, is that God was angry. If we had been able to take a look inside, you know, this other way, like it was from compassion. Yeah. It was from
He's
service.
Having compassion on the children and widows that are getting the short right. end of the stick big time.
Right.
Yeah.
The mercy and the grace. And that's why this is such a powerful conversation, I think, is because sometimes we assume things based on the culture we were raised, or, you know, I only read the King James Bible growing up. So I didn't even know that there were these other versions that might have interpreted the word maybe more closely to what it was intended. Yeah. Because now we have Google and yeah. this yeah. internet. And when they were King James, they didn't have all of those resources. So this is not a criticism. It's just interesting to think about our perception of what the character and attributes of God are, and then just say, well, what if that's like exactly what you did, go down this journey of, well, what if that's not quite,
what if that's
accurate?
Not his character? What if I'm interpreting yeah. it differently than even the prophets intended it? Even in the dog eat dog world, they weren't saying yeah. that God is, they did say he was angry a lot, but oh, this is another funny thing. I looked up the word anger, and the one that is most frequently assigned to God. So the vast, vast majority of the words when God says he's angry is a word, I think it's the Hebrew word af, A-P-H, I think. I could be a little bit off on that. But it actually means it's interpreted as anger the vast majority of time, like some of those other words were. But sometimes it's interpreted as nose, and sometimes it's interpreted as face, because it means to breathe wow. hard through the nose. So does that like not totally change what God's anger is? Like, what if he's just really like, I can't believe they just did that. You
know what I mean? Like, I'm going to take a deep breath, and then I'm going to respond.
Yes. What if he's just kind of having a moment of frustration? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe these kids.
Yeah.
He breathes hard through his nose. He pulls himself together, and then he has a totally compassionate response that considers the manner of behavior that's going to be the best, that considers the rights of the kids that he needs to think about, that considers the, actually that right one is really interesting because it can also be righteous. So if he says, I am righteous, or he commands us to be righteous, a lot of times it's that same Hebrew word as the one that is translated as judge. So when you look at the words that way, for me, it just completely changed everything. Because number one, yes, it is a dog-eat-dog world. But number two, even at its worst, if we look a little deeper, a few levels deeper into what those words mean, they're not as scary and frightening and overwhelming as we think. Like, for example, jealous. I looked that one up. And it actually is a word that is never, ever, ever attributed to a human being, ever. It is only attributed to God. So it is a God-like feeling, something that he has, that the King James people said was jealousy. But what it really means more accurately is that he expects soul committed devotion, which is a totally different thing than like jealousy. Like, I don't want you to like somebody else, but I can see I can see why the King James Version were like, well, you know, sometimes people feel jealous and they kind of like put their little King James on there. And then, of course, jealousy has gone through a similar thing as the word judgment, that it kind of has a different, a really negative connotation now that it might not have had in King James English era. So God, yeah, he expects devotion. Does that mean he's like a jerk and he's out to get us if we mess up? Absolutely not. He's still full of compassion. He's still full of mercy. He's still full of love to all of us. And when he, like, I've even like reviewed this in my head when I'm like, okay, am I putting this child in her room because I think she's a little stinker and I can't believe she did that and there's something wrong with her, which is an accusing energy, which is only assigned to Satan through all of scripture. Accusing is always Satan. Being a defender is assigned to Christ. Being an advocate is assigned to Christ. Mm-hmm. And do I have an accusatory feeling towards my child when I separate them from the rest of the family? Or do I have a compassionate defense feeling that I can't allow that behavior to harm the other children, and so I need to separate you, but I still love you, and I'm sure like you're going to be able to get on top of this. You know, like it's a totally different feeling. Just like you said, the feeling that you have when you discipline a child, is it accusatory discipline or is it compassionate and defense motivating, advocating energy that you have towards your child? It really makes a difference. It totally makes a difference. No matter what label you put on it, there is an emotional energy, whether you call it judgment or justice or consequence or limit or whatever it is that you want to call it. It's the energy that matters. And I, from my entire lifetime of trying really, really hard to understand and get to know my Savior, I just know he never, ever has that accusatory, blaming, attacking energy. He never does. I don't care what the Old Testament says in King James English. I just don't care what it says. That is not the God I worship. It just isn't.
Right.
And the more I study deeper, I realize that actually wasn't the God. Even people in a culturally dog-eat-dog world, even in that culture, they still actually weren't representing him. Like, it just got lost in translation.
That's
and
powerful.
And it got lost in the way the words have changed. Even in our own culture, we view them differently than they did in King James, which was different than it was in the Hebrew. So it was a really cool journey, like a really cool journey. And I want to add one more thing, because this was totally because of you, Andy. I was reading Matthew 6. It's all in Matthew 6. We've got verses 2 through 4, 5 through 8, and verse 16.
Okay.
And I couldn't stop thinking of you because...
I love it.
Because this is what he says. Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do. So he says, don't be like the hypocrites, because, you know, they're going to have their reward. And that word reward stuck out to me because I had just been listening to you. You were talking about don't use external rewards and punishments. Don't use them. And I was like, well, okay, I've looked up judge and justice and anger. And like, I believe that God is compassionate and I want to be that kind of compassionate person. And I want to eliminate this like human anger that is anywhere besides in compassion of defense of the helpless. Like, I want to get rid of that anger in my soul so that I can be a kinder, more compassionate person. But then looking at rewards, it was like, well, yeah, he does reward us too. So like, what does that mean? So
yes.
here's the geek out part, Andy.
So glad.
So he has the hypocrite's reward in Matthew 6, 2 through 4, and then he has God's reward. When you do your alms, don't let your left hand or right know what you're doing. Do your alms in secret. So that's 2 through 4. Then in 5 through 8, he makes another comparison. Don't be like the hypocrites when they pray, because they love like be standing in the synagogues. They like showing off, basically, and they have their reward. But when you pray, go to your closet and shut your door. And the Father who seeth in secret, he will reward thee openly. Okay, so he has that comparison again. And with the two words reward. Then here's Matthew 6:16 through 18. Then he says again, the hypocrites, don't be like them of a sad countenance when they fast, because they're going to have their reward. You appear like you're not fasting, and the Father who sees in secret, he will reward thee openly. So again, we have this three times he's comparing hypocrites' behavior and genuine followers of Christ's behavior, and how they both have a reward. Well, here's the thing. The hypocrite's reward in all three instances is one Greek word. And the reward from God in all three instances is another separate Greek word. They are both translated as reward, but they are different Greek words. And here's the geek part of me that like totally wants to throw up my arms and shout hallelujah Andy, you totally got this right. Here he says, this is the one for the hypocrite. This is the definition of the Greek word behind it. Dues paid for work. It's tit for tat, this for that. Wages for hire, in both senses, rewards and punishments. Of the rewards, it's good and bad. It's like you're literally paying for your service, either good or bad. It is your reward or your wages or your punishment, depending on whether your actions have been good or bad.
Okay.
Okay. This is the reward that God gives to deliver or to give away for one's own profit what is one's own to sell. To give things promised under oath and to give back and restore. So I think of Christ, right? Like he's the only one who can give his reward of salvation. He's the only one who can deliver us. And when we pray in secret and we fast in secret and we serve in secret, he sees that and he gives us what only he can give. And it is not a this for that. It is not, oh, you've been good, therefore I will give you a good reward. It is, I know you love me and I want you to be with me. So let me make that possible. Is that not so powerful?
That's so good because it's about, and I want to hear more about what you're thinking, but what's coming up for me right now, it's about the relationship. It's about trust. It's about a belief in someone. It goes way beyond, it's not transactional.
It's not transactional. That's a great word.
It's deeper. It's profound. I love that there's a difference. I haven't ever looked that up, ever.
Yeah. I wouldn't have my unless intuition. I've been listening to you.
I was challenging you on everything. Right. Well, and it's so funny. I've had more than a few people who are good Christian people who are like, but God punishes and gives rewards all of the time. So isn't that the godly way to parent? So I love that we're peeling back the layers of the onion because you have to go deeper and say, well, I don't know, is it? I'm not really sure, but let's look at that deeper. And I did a little bit of research on my own, enough to satisfy, you know, what I needed to satisfy me. But I feel like what you have done is so much deeper and will help people who maybe are just really still struggling, because there is, if you're not confident that this is, you know, a honorable way to parent, a way to interact with other humans that is in alignment with your belief system, then it's going to be really hard to step into it. Cause you're like, I don't know, this feels bad, you know?
Yeah.
But when you can look at stuff that you've brought up today, especially this reward, I'm so glad you brought the reward stuff up, that it's so different than what we initially assume when you take a step back. And I just love restore. Isn't that the ultimate reward, is to be restored in our relationships with each other and to have the trust? I don't know, that just feels so good. So tell me more though, like, how did it land for you when you read that? How did it help maybe make sense of any dissonance you had?
Well, for me, it really helped motivate me to want to beat my anger. And I still haven't totally, and we've talked about this before, I think I just tend, like I mentioned to you before, I feel like I'm so ADHD. Like there just isn't that prefrontal cortex that's supposed to say, give me the pause button between stimulus and response. Like I just don't have that space. It's like a nanosecond for me. But I can catch myself quickly and I can repair. And I actually, the more thought work I do, the more emotional work I do, I notice that the stimulus, I don't have the space between stimulus and response. I don't have that space, but I do have the ability to completely change the response. And that's the longer term work. Like sometimes my response legitimately is different than it ever used to be. And so the space becomes almost not needed. Like I don't need that space, that time to kind of give myself to cool off, because I never actually get triggered in the first place.
Yeah.
Because my thoughts and the way I'm viewing the situation are so different.
Yeah.
And I feel like that change has happened for me. And the more I focus on the motivation of making sure that my anger is in check and making sure that I'm checking all of my assumptions about my kids' behaviors. Whenever I feel accusatory, like I already know, like hands down, I don't have the right spirit with me. I just know that. It's not God's spirit, period, end of story. So call it anger, call it frustration, call it whatever you want. If I feel accusatory and blaming, I know I've got repair work to do with my kids if I've opened my mouth at all while I'm feeling that way. And I know, like, it is just clear as a bell in my head that it is all about the connection. God loves his children. He loves the orphans. He loves the widows. He loves making sure that good rules and good laws are in place to keep us safe. I love that you describe rules. The purpose of consequences or limits is not to teach. It is to have structure, order, and safety. And like, the more I view the words in that light, it's like, yep, that's why God does it. It's for structure and order and safety. And that's it. And his connection is one way. And he never, ever, ever lets go of us. He just doesn't.
Yeah.
And if we don't feel the connection from our side, it's not because he's like, eh, you're done. It's not this like transactional thing. It's us saying, oh, I'm not listening to you. I'm going to listen to this accusatory mean voice instead. You know, it's us. It's yeah. our responsibility. We're the ones who have severed the connection. Like, I like the scripture mm-hmm. that if you love me, keep my commandments. But if you don't keep my commandments, you will not abide in my love, which is totally different than saying, if you don't keep my commandments, I won't love you anymore.
Right.
His love is still there. We just won't abide in it. We won't feel it. And isn't off. That so true? Like, don't we see that with our kids sometimes too, when we're parenting? Like, I know the more I've practiced your work, I'm like, I am in a good place. I am calm. I love my kids. This is a really hard limit to set. They are not going to like it. I know they're not going to be happy, but they broke the mm-hmm. rule, and I'm going to love the heck out of them while they go through this cycle of frustration with the limit. And yeah. and I know when I'm in that space, when I love them to pieces, and it doesn't yeah. hurt when they're mad, and it doesn't hurt when they call me names, and it doesn't hurt when they get upset with me, because I love them. They're not feeling my love in that moment. My love is there. And I believe yes. with all of my soul, that is how God parents. I just believe it with all my soul.
Mm, me too. I totally believe that too.
You got Amen. Me. You got me out of this, Abby. My soul hurt your soul. And I was like, that's true. But it doesn't match what's in my head. So I don't know how to deal these two. And so I had to do the research. But now my head and my heart are on the same page. And I just love it. I'm so grateful to
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad you did the research, because I haven't done this deep dive so to the level you did. And I envision God the same way. You know, he's up there and we might be throwing little temper tantrums and saying, you know, this is my vision. And I hope this isn't considered sacrilegious for anybody, because I don't even know. But like, I visualize it, if somebody's reading, maybe their translator's reading it and they're like, wow, God was really mad. I probably should make sure I translate that and reflect that he's really mad, you know? And it's yeah. lost in translation. And just like when our kids are might think, Mom, you are so mean. Or have you ever had yeah. a kid say, why are yeah. you yelling at me? And you're not yelling. Yeah. You're like, I yeah. entirely erased my voice. But in their mind, you know, a whisper is a yell. Uh-huh. And so you can just smile and think, oh, I understand that at the place you're at right now, you can't see me as anything but mean, because you're so triggered. And I think that's the same thing sometimes that happens. Either the prophets maybe wrote it down because that's what they were feeling, or maybe a translation, or maybe none of it. And it's just me making up this concocted story. And it's yeah. just culturally, that's what I
mean. Or even the definitions. You know. Yeah. Culturally have changed. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like
culturally, so many factors, so many human factors in there.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I do envision God just saying, oh, I love you no matter what. And even though I'm having to say this behavior is unacceptable, I will never say you as a human, as yeah. my child, are unacceptable. And that's the role model that we get to step into when we can see clearly that that is the model that we are seeing in the Bible. And we can, you know, have the privilege and opportunity and honor to hear from you. Like today, it's such a gift to be able to say, oh, that is what was happening. That is what's occurring. Okay, I can do this confidently. This isn't against anything. This is actually an honorable, beautiful way of parenting that respects me and the child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And God's way of doing things.
God's way of doing things. Yeah. Any final thoughts or anything we missed? I feel like this was so rich.
I feel like I have totally like taken people through a fire hose of the last 15 years of me like really struggling with these principles. But I just hope it was helpful. I hope maybe you can see God in a different light. I know so many people who are really afraid of God. I mean, they just mm-hmm. are. They think that he is. And I believed it too when I was a kid. I thought that he was catching me in all of my mistakes. You know, he sees everything. Like, how creepy is that? Oh my gosh, he saw everything that I did wrong.
Yeah.
And just know that is not the eyes through which he is viewing you. Does he see your mistakes? Yeah. But he sees your beauty. He sees your capacity. He sees your potential. He sees where you are now, and he loves you exactly where you are now. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have just felt seen and loved by God, period. Right where I am, even in the mess. And right. just knowing. I mean, just the other day, I was really mad that I was going on a walk, and I was feeling mad, and I was proud of myself that I was on a walk and started yelling at my kids. And I'm like,
huge win. Huge win.
Why did you give these kids to me? Like, I am the worst mom for them. I'm never going to get over. Like, I'm never going to get on top of this, you know, and I'm never going to treat them the way you treat them. And I bet there would be a better mom out there. And like, I've never, you know, this word chastise is interesting too. I want to study more of it because it does say that God, if he loves us, he will chastise us. But this is what chastisement is for me. And I can only think of a very small handful of times. And this was one of those moments. It was just recently. He never chastises me, but this is what he said to me. Natalie Ann, I gave those kids to you. Do you trust me? And I was like, yeah, I trust you, you know?
Yeah. He didn't make a mistake.
He's not mad at me. He's just getting my attention. That's what chastise means. Like, just to get your attention. Hold that thought. And then he told me to go study what it really means to fail. Because I was really feeling like I was failing that day. And he said, you know what? You need to learn what fail really means. And holy moly, that's another topic for another day.
We can jump back on. Yeah, I love the topic of failure. Yeah, just what that means. He is so good.
That is how the only time he's ever been sharp with me is that way of just like, whoa, hold on. That is not a thought that's going to help you. I gave you your kids. Do you trust me?
Even there's so much compassion there.
Right.
Like you think of someone who's really struggling in a loop that's not helping and they're not going to get out. And to have somebody be honest enough with you and help you self-confront.
Yep.
Say, okay, hello, we got to shake you up a little bit. Like that's not, like even that is, like it's chastisement. You could use that word, but you could also just use love and kindness and compassion.
Truth teller.
Yeah. And
lie pointer outer.
Right. You're not being honest with yourself. And I need you to know that. And that's so important. And I don't know that we always get that in our life enough, you know, and are we willing to receive it? Whole nother topic we could go into, but I love having the lenses on that God is always compassionate and loving, and it might feel sharp to me, but it's not sharp in a mean way. If it is sharp, it's just direct.
Yeah. Not derogatory or accusatory. Just if he's sharp, sometimes it's because he loves you so much. He's just trying to help you stop hurting yourself.
Right. Like, I need you to wake up.
He's so good. Just trust him.
Trust him. It's funny because we were watching Pollyanna with the family, I don't know, years ago, decade ago. And there's a scene where they're in church and the preacher gets up and he shouts from he shouts from the pulpit, death comes unexpectedly. And he's like really trying to evoke fear, you know, into the congregation. Yeah. And my kids were just flabbergasted by it. And then we just laughed and they would replay it. But to me, it's this iconic representation of being afraid of God and thinking that has been an interpretation that people have that hopefully we'll start getting out of that and realize, no, he's just really loving. But
really
I think he is really loving. And the first step is just to recognize maybe that our interpretation, the definition of words like you brought up today, just aren't accurate.
Yep.
And can I see it another way?
Just pause and look a little differently at the words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Natalie, thank you so much. We might have to jump on and do some other exploration of some other side topics.
Failure really and perfection.
Failure. Oh, yeah. I have so many thoughts about both of those topics.
It's my new study topic.
Yeah. It's so good to be able to be honest with ourselves too. If something does feel out of alignment, specifically we're talking about, you know, connect method parenting, but if something does feel out of alignment with my belief system, like to explore it and say like what's off and to do that exploration. And I'm so glad you came to the conclusion that they're in harmony. Yeah. I feel that way too.
Me
hopefully
too. Everyone. I would have really been wrestling still if I'm like, how do I do this?
Yeah. Well, you probably would have said, this is, you know, my thing, but I love that truth came out that truth stood this test of time. So will you just tell everybody, just because I want people to see your artwork, where can they find your artwork? And then we will for sure link in the show notes where they can get some more information about, you know, if they want to actually see the Greek words that you were referring to, that might be on that document, and maybe the revised video or something, if that ever comes out. But whatever resources, they can see those as well, because you definitely have put in some time. It's like a master's degree that you've been in for this.
That way.
Yeah.
No theology is going to give me an honorary PhD, but I'm okay with that, like, as long as I'm a better mom.
That's right. That's what matters. That's what matters. But yeah, tell people where they can find you.
Just my website, nataliehunsaker.com. And the last time I checked Google, even if you spell my name wrong, it'll still pop up at the top. But you do have to spell it Nataliehunsaker. That's my website. That'll have pretty much everything on it. Right now I'm focused on Isaiah, but I'm going to be picking up history early next year. And I just love finding, stories of history that demonstrate the loving nature of God and his just wisdom, how to help us find how to be more like God. So all of my art is essentially a visual representation of some lesson that I have learned that has changed my life for the better, either from the scriptures or from history. And just seeing how God works with humans through time is just really, really fascinating to me. So I love it.
And it's beautiful. And I don't know how often you do this, but sometimes on Instagram, she'll do time lapses of her painting, and I'll just watch them. How is she doing this? I'm so not artistic. My one artistic project was drawing stick figures with Sharpies on the wall as like a 7-year-old or something. And that just doomed me for life. It showed me the lack of aptitude I had. I mean, maybe I could go develop some modest skills.
It's a learnable skill, just like anything. We just don't learn it in schools. They're like, it's really important to know math, but they never say it's really important to learn how to see so that you can draw accurately. Nobody says that, right?
Which is too bad. And it's such a... it's such a beautiful gift you have, and such a blessing to just even see you create it. It's absolutely incredible. Thanks, thank you, Andy, so much for coming on and doing this deep dive with me. And I know it's going to help so many of the parents that are listening are going to thank you.
They I can hope put so. Aside. Thank you, Andy. You are just such a wonderful gift in our family. Oh. We're like, well, Andy says.
It's been such an honor being able to work alongside you and see your genius all along the way. So thank you
for sharing your genius with me. You have definitely helped me a lot. So it's a mutual appreciation and respect.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, come check out League, my Connect Method parenting coaching program, where we take this material and we apply it using my proven formula. Head over to cmp.works/join.